go ahead. We're now recording.
Thank you, Ricardo. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the UDRP domain name lock call on the 12th of July, 2012. On the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Hugo de Falo, Terry Falco, Juan Manuel Rojas, Randy Ferguson, Matt Schneller, Volker Greiman, Luke Sosa, Christine Duane, Julia Lerman, and Laurie Anderson. From staff, we have Marika Turnings, Margie Milam, Barry Cobb, and myself, Matthew Peregrine. And we have apologies from Gabriela Schleck and Michaela Nalin. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. Michaela is absent again, and I am glad to take over. And I'm glad to turn the first item of the review of the product meeting over to Marika, since I only found out I'm taking over about 5 minutes ago.
Yes, so this is Marika. Just a very brief recap. I think I sent everyone as well an email. We had a very good session, I think, in Prague, where David Roche-Turner presented a case study from the perspective of UDRP providers. And I think that really resulted in a lot of interesting questions and discussions. So I would strongly recommend anyone that wasn't able to participate in that session to review the transcript and look at the slides or look at the recording. I think you see the link here as well in the agenda where you can find all the information, and I also sent it earlier in an email. I'm not really sure if there's anything more. I think one thing to mention there as well, for those that weren't at the face-to-face meeting, we also had an update to the GNSO Council in the weekend session where we provided an overview of the activities of the working group to date. And as you may recall, there was a question from the working group with regards to clarifying its charter to determine whether indeed the charter discussing locking, whether it also means whether the group can address recommendations in relation to unlocking of domain names once a UDRP dispute has been completed. And the council confirmed in that meeting that, you know, it's their assumption that those recommendations would also address unlocking. So I think, you know, that's a point where the working group can now move forward on, and has been clarified by the council. I don't think there's anything else to add specifically on the meeting in Prague. One of the agenda items, the next item on the agenda, was something that we actually had on the agenda for Prague, but as we spent quite a lot of time discussing the UDRP provider case study, we didn't actually have any time left to go into the registrar case study, which, you know, we hope to cover on today's call. And I don't know if anyone else wants to contribute anything or raise anything with regard to what was discussed in Prague or anything else they want to highlight from that perspective.
I don't think I have much other than to point out I had all sorts of great arguments ready why we should be allowed to consider unlocking as well as locking, and council basically said makes sense to them, and didn't have any opportunity to use any of my arguments, so it was disappointing. But but it didn't take much time, so that was good. If nothing else, I don't see any hands up, then we can go on to the next item, and I'll pass the baton over to Luke to review his presentation.
And Luke, this is Marika. You can move the slide if you see in the Adobe Connect. I've made you a presenter, so if you click the arrows at the bottom of the presentation pod, you move the slides backwards or forward, so you have control.
Okay, got it. Thanks. Okay, so Luke from EuroDNS. So rather than doing a presentation of just one specific case and pointing out the flaws of just an hammering on one law firm, I've attempted to do a presentation of all the flaws of the lock process in the UDRP. So it's more a view stand from the registrar point of view rather than a case study. So in theory, normally, the registrar should be informed of the complaint by the UDRP provider when the case has been reviewed for administrative compliance. And then the registrar should maintain the status quo. And after that, leave the parties and the panel at their fun, and finally implement the decision. That's only theory. Because as the Greek philosopher Morpheus said, welcome to the real world. The registrar may be informed at other times of the proceedings. The first one I've called it the early notification, which is basically the complaint and copying the registrar to his email to the ERP provider. And at that point, the actions we are taking is we notify the registrant that the complaint has been lodged. We will remind them of our terms and conditions, especially the right of third parties, pertaining to the right of third parties, and they are acceptance to submit to your DRP. And where applicable, we notify the relevant reseller. But at that point, we do not take any lock measure on the domain name for basically three reasons. No administrative review has been operated at that stage. The registrants may still lift the privacy service that may be activated on the domain. And also there is a high percentage of settlements that happen at that stage because registrants usually don't respond to complaints they receive via their WHOIS details, but they are more prone to respond to their registrar and notification. And we may also be informed of the complaint by the ERP provider via the so-called request for registrar verification, which consists in us confirming that the domain name is still registered with us, that the WHOIS details are the same as those in our database, that UDRP apply to the domain name, confirm also the date of registration and expiration of the domain name. And for some UDRP providers, it gives us time to lift the WHOIS privacy service and obviously to confirm that the lock measure will be applied. So I've just copy-pasted the request for verification that we received from NAS. NAS allow us to lift any privacy services since July 1st of 2010. WIFO does the same, but the CAC, the Czech Arbitration Court, is mute regarding WHOIS privacy service. And we have already seen two cases where the WHOIS privacy service provider was dragged into the UDRP and made a correspondence to the decision. The same for the registrar lock. It's still taken from the registrar verification request. So WIPO is making a reference to the policy. NAF is putting lock in uppercase. Maybe they believe it's more meaningful as to the action we are supposed to take. And again, CAC is the less facultative in the matter. They just say that the names shall be locked. As to maintaining the status quo, what we are doing upon the receipt of the request for verification is that we notify the registrant that the domain and it will be locked because it is submitted subject to a UDRP proceeding. We reply to the UDRP provider request, and we apply our lock measure. So the lock measure we apply, but it's just URDMS. I think most of registrars are applying the same measure, or more or less the same measure. But what we apply is we transfer the domain name in a dedicated account where only my department has access to. We apply the registrar transfer lock at the registry or the registry lock. And we also place the domain name in the auto renew status to avoid expiration. And to answer to Matt, no, we do not offer any privacy service, but third party who do that, and they may want to lift their or suspend their service upon complaint. And we notify the seller if applicable. So maintaining the status quo or the registrar lock, if I'm referring to paragraph 8A and B of the UDRP rules, it allows the registrant to modify its WHOIS details during the arbitration proceeding. If the new registrant is providing proof of his acceptance to be bound by the arbitration court decision. But regarding paragraph 8B, this we never faced, that I'm not sure how we would handle it. It's because it states that the domain name may be transferred to another registrar during the arbitration proceeding, and I'm not sure how to maintain the status quo or the registrar lock while allowing the transfer to another registrar. Also, our approach to the registrar lock is to never change the DNS. We've received several requests during a UDRP proceeding to change the DNS, but we do that, but only in cases where there is a blatant infringement of criminal law, Luxembourgish criminal law. For example, if the domain name is pointing to pedophile website or phishing website or any criminal offense, then we will suspend. But our policy is not to change the DNS. So it allows the panelists to witness and evaluate the use made of the domain name. And also, if the decision is in favor of the respondents, we would have suspended the domain name for 3 months. I don't know exactly the fee. It's very David. I think it's David, you're here. How much do you charge for the DRP? Just to the fee for the provider? Anyway, so I believe it's something like $2,000 US dollars. So, okay, thanks, Walker. So, $1,500 for one panelist. And this means that for that amount, you could suspend your competitor for and just basically stop his business for 3 months. You would just need to lodge a UDRP complaint and start your UDRP proceeding and basically kill your competitor business. And then the registrar has for suspending the domain name. We would render ourselves liable. So, and now the fun part is when we have to implement the decision. When the complaint is denied, it's quite easy. We notify the registrant when we receive the decision and also the reseller if applicable. And after 10 business days, we just put the domain name back in the registrant account. But when the decision is in favor of the complainant, this is when we are facing the most problems. Because most of the time we have to chase the complainant to implement the decision. Because for their representative, their job is limited to the UDRP. And once they have the decision, it seems like they don't care about the transfer of the domain name. And what we do is we ask the complainants or its representative to open an account on our platform, and then we transfer the domain name there. But we do not do that ourselves because the acceptance of our terms and conditions happen when opening the domain name. And for now, the trade operation or the chain of ownership of a domain name is free, but who knows with new GTLD. So if, for example, .gay domain name, the registry for .gay domain name would charge €200 for a change of ownership, it would be us who would have to bear this cost if we didn't have the acceptance of the complainant to our terms and conditions. And also the flaws that I see in the current rules is the fact that only the UDRP provider is receiving the details, the full details of the complainant. As a registrar, we only receive the details of the representative, and they are not always complete, and they do not allow us to reach the complainants to transfer the domain name under their control. And even when we have the details of the complainant, that needs to be appointed in the hearing. We don't know if that needs to be appointed in the hearing, but the details of the complainant, because sometimes the details of the complainant are not the same as those of the one that shall be registered in the rules. For example, sometimes the complainant is the trademark holder, which was the base for the UDRP, where the domain name registrant or the details to apply as the main registrant are not the same as the trademark holder. Because it may be a group of company and you may have an entity that holds the trademark and another one which is managing the main name for some entity. And once the details in the UDRP are applied and the decision implemented, we still need to transfer the domain name under the control of the complainant. And we had several cases where we were able to implement the decisions in the sense that the UDRP details were those of the complainant, the winning party, but we couldn't communicate with the complainants to have them manage their domain name so that the domain be transferred under their control. Okay, that would be all for me. It's really weird to speak and have no reply, but here you go. If you have any questions, feel free.
Thank you. I've got a whole bunch of questions, but let's open it up to anyone else who has any comments, questions, or whatever before I chime in. One thing that would be interesting for many other registrars is, are your experiences similar to what Luke has described, or do you see any real differences? Anybody? Nope. Volker?
Okay, our procedure is pretty much the same. There's small differences. For example, we do not push out the domain from the account of the registrant or the reseller when we receive the complaint. We just lock the domain name and nothing can happen to it at that stage. So there's no need to push it to a different account. We only push it to a different account when the complainant has won and the domain has to be pushed to the new account of the complainant. There was one other thing. Regarding the deletion lock, we place a deletion lock on the domain name, but we will allow the respondent to request a manual deletion, at which point we will offer the domain name to the complainant at the same terms. That's about the only differences I could make out on. Yeah.
Thank you, Walker. Anyone else? All right. I'll start on my list. Some of them are comments. Some of them are questions. Luke, you mentioned that you don't change DNS so that the website is preserved. That, of course, presumes that you have control. If the registrant had pointed to another DNS server, then obviously they can take whatever action they want, and it's out of your control.
Yes, indeed. We could change the DNS for hours, but it's only in cases of blatant infringement.
Okay. You commented that you don't know if you could really change the registrar because that would require unlocking at that point. Is that something that's really come up? I mean, I understand the UDRP allows for it, but is that something which you've seen in real life, or you're just identifying an anomaly of a policy which may not be implementable?
Yeah, the latter. Yeah, hopefully we never faced that situation, but we, according to the UDRP policy, we would be bound to do that.
Okay, thank you. And my last comment is, you made a comment that it's conceivable that someone could put a competitor out of business for a period of time for $1,500. It strikes me that you can also $1,500 will also pay to reveal the privacy to have a privacy service reveal who the owner is, which is a pretty small price. to do so that in theory would work as well. Essentially, a frivolous but sounding good request could essentially reveal privacy if the privacy supplier follows that pattern. Is that correct?
I believe so. We do not offer this service, but from our experience with host privacy services provider, yes, this is usually how they are acting.
Interesting. So privacy is okay unless your privacy is okay unless you're the person who wants to know who you are has $1,500.
Basically, yes.
Any other comments, questions? Yes, David.
Thanks very much, Alan, and thanks very much, Luke, as well, for that very informative presentation. Just a comment to note with respect to paragraph 8 of the UDRP, our understanding, at least, of that provision is that it precludes any registrant transfer during a pending UDRP proceeding or for 15 days thereafter. But transfer to a different registrant or registrar is permitted on certain terms only during a pending court action or arbitration, but not during a UDRP as such.
Ah, okay.
You may be right. I mean, it's just my understanding of this paragraph.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the language now in front of me, and it at least it seems to us to be fairly clear on that point. But anyway, just a point to note, perhaps.
Okay, thank you. Other comments, questions? Dave, is your hand still up, or is that again?
It's no longer up. I'll
okay.
Take it now.
All right, if there are no other questions and no comments, we'll go on to the next item, which is the review of the first survey responses, which Marika sent out with the agenda. And again, because I haven't prepared to actually present, I'm going to ask Marika to be the speaker on this one.
This is Marika. Where would you like to start with the UDRP provider response or the registrars? And just a note, because what I did send were the preliminary results, as the survey was still open yesterday as well, and I actually did see that there has been one further response from a registrar made in the meantime. So I'll need to update that one.
Well,
so
do it. Yeah, no, that's fine. Do what we have at this point, though. If you start with the registrar one first.
But in that case, it might make sense to start with the UDRP providers, as all of them have responded.
Fine.
And the other
okay.
one needs to be updated.
You're the boss.
But I have to admit as well, I didn't have a very detailed look at this either. I just put the report together and didn't have...
Someone is vacuuming.
Okay.
All right.
So basically what I did, I just put the results of the survey together in this report. I haven't done any kind of correlation of data, or if you see as well in the open responses there, I think there are some similar responses. This is just the raw data in a document overview. So I'm happy to try to run through it, or I don't know if other people already had a chance to look at it in greater detail, or how would you like to?
I know I haven't looked at it at all. I'm in the process of upgrading a computer, and that's what I've been doing the last couple of days. And right now my email's on a different computer than I can look at the PDFs on. So, yes, I'd like you to run through to the extent you have, because I certainly can't right now.
Okay. So if on the screen you'll see the survey results from the UDRP provider. As you can see from question 1 and 2, we got feedback from the four UDRP providers at the moment. Not really sure if we need to cover question 3, which talks about the number of UDRP disputes that they have experience with. You can review that by yourself. Looking at question 4, in approximately what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you handle do registrars log the domain names at issue, taken on a representative sample of UDRP disputes that you have had experience with? And here you can see that the responses, all of them respond that it's more than 75% of cases that the domain name is locked by registrars.
Yeah, Marika, it strikes me that perhaps we should have had an option for virtually all. I'm not sure when I look at that. Does that mean only 75%, or it's effectively 100? I guess it's too late to change that now, but it strikes me once I see the answers that there's a significant difference between the two. Thank you. Let's go
right
on, though.
Well, listen, Rick, as we both have David, Brian, as well as Christine on the call, I see some of them already typing. I'm sure they can shed some more light on that if they want to.
Good point.
So question five, in approximately what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you handle do registrars fail to confirm lock of the domain names at issue for purposes of UDRP dispute within 5 days of your sending a provider verification request to the concerned registrar, taken on a representative sample of UDRP disputes that you have had experience with? Three respond here that it's in less than 25% of cases, and one responds that it is between 25 and 50%.
That's scary. Go ahead. Thank you.
Question six, are you aware of registrars which log domain names upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant? Here the responses are split, two say yes, two say no. Question seven.
Hey, Marika, one second. If anyone has any questions, please put your hand up or call out. There's no point in waiting to the end if there's anything that you want to raise. Thank you. Go ahead.
So question seven, if you answered yes to the previous question, in what approximate percentage of UDRP proceedings administered by you are you aware of this having occurred? And here the two that responded yes say in less than 25% of cases. Question eight, in approximately what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of the registrar having confirmed a lock of a domain name in reply to request for registrar verification from you, but in which there was nevertheless subsequent material changes to the registrant data which impacted administration of UDRP disputes? And here three responded that it's in less than 25% of cases. And one respondent actually even further narrowed that number and saying that it's in less than 5% of cases. So question nine, are you aware of registrars which log domain names only upon receipt of a notice of commencement, i.e. occasion of complaint under UDRP rules paragraph 4 from you? And here all four responded a no. Question 10, if you answered yes to the previous question, which is moot because everyone, I think, responded no, so no need to cover that one further. Question 11, how long does it typically take you to issue a request for registrar verification from the time of receipt of a UDRP complaint from a complainant where the complainant has followed all UDRP rules and your supplemental rules? Two responded that's less than 12 hours. One responded that between 12 and 24 hours. One other response which specified that in majority, 55% of cases in less than 12 hours, with overall average accounting for weekends, et cetera, rounded up approximately 15 hours. Question 12, in approximately what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of a registrar's confirmed domain name lock failing to prevent an apparently prohibited e.g. under UDRP paragraph AB, a transfer to another registrar during pendency of a UDRP proceeding? Two respond here, less than 25%, and two provided other information. One says less than 5%, and the second response is, this only happened in cases where the registrar provided verification but did not expressly confirm locking. Question 13, in what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of a registrar's confirmed domain name lock having failed to prevent an apparently prohibited, e.g. on the UDRP paragraph AA, transfer of a domain name registration to another registrant? Two respond here in less than 25% of cases, and there were two other responses provided, one saying less than 5%. And the second one, again, this only happened in cases where the registrar provided verification but did not expressly confirm locking. Question 14, in what percentage of UDRP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of a registrar's confirmed domain name lock having failed to prevent modification of any materially relevant WIS data? example given registrant contact information. Three of the UERP providers responded here then in less than 25% of cases, and one responded that the requested data is not available. Question 15, in approximately what percentage of UERP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of a privacy or proxy registration service appearing in the WHOIS at the time of filing and being named as respondent in a filed complaint in which the registrar discloses an underlying or actual registrant and confirms lock on that basis in response to your registrar verification request? Two responded that it's in less than 25% of cases, and two responded that it's between 25 and 50%. Question 16, and approximately what percentage of UERP proceedings that you have administered are you aware of a registrar's confirmed domain name lock pursuant to a UERP proceeding having apparently prevented expiration, e.g. the registrar confirms no further steps necessary to keep the domain name active and subject to UERP proceedings, of a domain name that passes its expiration date without renewal while a UERP proceeding is pending or in the 10 to 15-day wait period thereafter, e.g. the registrar does not appear to require payment by either UERP party pursuant to the expired domain name deletion policy to keep the disputed domain name active and subject to the UERP proceedings. Three responded here that it's in less than 25% of cases, and one responded that the requested data is not available. Question 17. If the UERP proceeding is decided in favor of the complainant, in approximately what percentage of cases are you aware of the registrar or the registrar's lock having hindered transfer of the domain name to the complainant after the 10-day wait period expires? Ron responds here says less than 25%. One says requested data not available, and there were two other responses provided, and what's saying the lock is never the issue. Unlocking is part of the transfer process. Either a registrar responds or doesn't. And a second response says it's very rare the registrars do not comply with the decisions at all, less than 5% of cases. However, there are many cases where they wait for much more than 10 business days, an estimation of 25 to 50% of cases to implement the decision. Question 18, if the UERP proceeding is decided in favor of the registrant, in what percentage of cases are you aware of where the registrar would not have unlocked the domain name once the 15-day wait period has expired? Here three respond that it's less than 25% of cases, and one response indicates that the requested data is not available. And then we go into the more open-ended questions. So the first question, question 19, basically asks, are there any other issues or information the working group should take into account as part of its deliberations? So there, I think the first one provides some information on some of the other questions as well. Regarding question 18, the wait period is 10 calendar days, not 15 days, and I'm not aware of registrar ever failing to unlock when a respondent has prevailed. Two, while the percentage of lock hassles might be relatively few, the time, hassle, and cost from complainants and the provider in dealing with the issues far eclipses by orders of magnitude the time, cost, and effort required for a case that doesn't present a problem. Three, the biggest problem is not the effectiveness of the lock once it's in place or the fact that the domain name has to be unlocked to transfer. The biggest problem is registrars taking many days to lock, coupled with the fact that complainant has to serve a respondent. This is a deadly combination that breeds cyber flight and wastes everyone's time. Then a second comment that was made, in addition to issues raised and information supplied during working group deliberations as a working group member and as a UERP provider in response to the survey, WIPO stands ready to provide additional, including more statistically detailed provider data, as also mentioned at the Prague meeting session, if considered helpful by the working group to further assist its deliberations. And the further questions go into the working group charter questions and input provided there. I don't know, Alan, do you want to go into those now as well, or do you first want to look at the registrar feedback on the specific questions?
Well, since you're asking the question, I'm presuming that from your original look at these, you don't think it's going to be really important to look at these right now. Is that correct?
Well, this, my assumption is that it would be more relevant to look specifically at these once the working group starts looking at the charter questions.
Okay.
I guess then it's really helpful to look at, you know, we can go through it now, but I think it's something we need to come back to as well when we actually start diving into the charter.
We only have 20 minutes left, so why don't we do the registrar survey quickly and then come back to this later if there's any time, but I suspect there won't be too much.
Okay, let me pull up the other one. And again, hoping by the next call, people will have had a chance to, you know, look into these data in further detail, and we might be able to have a more in-depth discussion on those, and hopefully some people might even be able to draw some conclusions from those as well.
Yeah.
So I'm looking.
Before you go on, Christine has put a note in the charter saying in the chat saying it's not 10 days but 10 business days. As opposed to 15, I presume that's the comment we're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I mistyped when I made my response, so I just wanted to clarify that I do actually know the right answer.
Okay, thank you. David?
Yeah, it might just be worth noting that there are two relevant time periods here that might be worth considering. The first one is the obligation under paragraph 4K to implement a decision that orders the transfer or the cancellation, within which there's 10 business days to implement the decision if there's no court challenge. Then there's the prohibition under paragraph 8 on the registrant transferring the domain name during a pending UDRP proceeding or for 15 business days thereafter. So because this question relates to a denial situation, i.e. where the registrant is successful, I think that's what the reference is probably intended to capture.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Christine. Good point, David. Thanks.
All right. No more hands, no new hands. So let's go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, so this is Marika again. What you have now on the screen are the results from the survey that was sent to registrars. As I noted before, the survey on the screen covers, I think, 41 completed responses from registrars, but I think someone else submitted a response yesterday, so I'll need to update it. So I guess the results might, you know, change slightly. But in any case, looking at the first, you know, we didn't require people to provide their names and affiliations, but 39 did, and 35 also provided their affiliation and provided as well an email address, which we could use to get in contact with some if we would have further questions. And question 4 basically talked a bit more about getting an insight as to, you know, the division between the registrars that responded, asking them how many UDRP disputes were handled by them in the last year. And you see there's a relatively widespread, although the majority of respondents handle 0 to 10 cases a year. So looking in at question 5, when do you typically lock domain names pursuant to UDRP proceedings? 48% responded that this happens upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant, i.e. where the complainant copies the registrar in an email serving the complaint on the registrant and the UDRP dispute resolution service provider. The other half, 48%, says that it's upon receipt of a provider's request for verification from the UDRP dispute resolution provider. Then 2% responds that they do not lock a domain name during UDRP proceedings. And there was one question, other, please specify, and this is a person that actually never had a UDRP case. Then looking at question 6, please describe what kind of lock you use to restrict changes on a domain name subject to a UDRP proceeding. 71% of respondents indicated that they apply an EPP lock. And 29% indicated that they provide, they're using other mechanisms. And I think if you quickly look here through the list, most prevalent locks seem to be a specific registrar lock or an EPP lock plus internal dispute lock. And then looking at the next question, number 7, please describe what kind of changes are prevented by the lock or mechanisms you apply as described in the previous question, noting that multiple answers may apply, And just a note here, there was something in the settings at the beginning of the survey that some people weren't able to select all the options. So you'll see in the responses, I think in the first four before this got fixed, that indicated that there were some other options that applied. So we might need to recalculate the numbers here if needed to make sure that we have an accurate representation of what is prevented. So 67% of respondents indicated that cancellation is prevented. 95% prevent transfer to other registrars. 72% of respondents indicate that they prevent a transfer to another account at the same registrar. 87% indicate that they prevent a change of registrants. 33% prevented expiration. 74% prevents modification of any WHOIS data. 51% indicate that they prevent modification of any WHOIS data except for where a bona fide privacy or proxy service is listed, is the listed registrant, and that service substitutes the information that is already that it already has on file for the actual registrant. And then there were a couple that provided other responses, I think, as you see.
Marisa, it's Alan. I have a question. If 74% say they don't allow any modification, but the previous survey implied that a fair number of domains that have a privacy service, the information is revealed. Or, I'm sorry, it may have been Luke's presentation. But I'm trying to understand how those two can go together. Am I missing something? If anyone can answer, I'd appreciate it. I mean, if the privacy service reveals who it is, that implies a change in who is data, doesn't it?
This is Christine from NAMP. I think that one of the problems is sort of a misunderstanding. I think some registrars believe that releasing the privacy shield doesn't count as a change.
But technically, that would be done by the privacy service, that is, the domain owner of record.
Correct, by the registrar, which would be the same thing, right?
If they're the privacy service, yes, then it's easy.
And from my conversations with different privacy and proxy providers, you know, they say our underlying registrant can't do anything, they can't update anything, they can't. But here we're gonna change the WHOIS information, so they don't believe that counts. And I'm not trying to say that with a positive or a negative spin. I'm just trying to maybe clarify for you how people may answer. We allow nothing to change, but we do update the privacy service.
Okay, but certainly, if they're not operating their own privacy service, or it's at arm's length, then the privacy service is the registrant, and that means the registrant is allowed to change the data.
That, in my opinion, yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
That is a change. Yes.
That's interesting situation. It's a lock, except sometimes not.
Correct.
Okay. Let's go on, Marika.
Yeah, and this is Marika, and I think Luke also responded, I think, in the chat, if I'm not mistaken, saying that indeed that was the interpretation. And it was Laurie, actually, who would refer to change by the registrant. So then moving on, just still looking at the responses here, there were some others, DNS. Someone responded as well, WIPO. I'm not really sure what is meant with that comment, but which change is prevented. But then some others said as well, suspend UDRP, remove locks. Question 8. If you typically apply a different kind of lock at different stages of the UDRP proceeding prior to completion, please describe when these different locks are applied and what the difference is between them. So basically say, first response is suspend the UDRP, then the locks are removed. Someone says, basically, we do not apply a different kind of lock, only one lock, not applicable. When a complaint comes, domain comes from WIPO, and basically, I think most of them actually say that they don't apply a different lock, but they still provide an answer. So question 9, what is the typical amount of time it takes for you to impose the domain name lock from receipt of notice from the complainant or receipt of a provider's request for verification from the UDRP dispute resolution service provider following your response to question 3? 51% of respondents indicate that it's in less than 12 hours on a business day. 26% indicate that it's between 12 and 24 hours on a business day. 18% indicate that it's between 24 hours and 2 business days. And then there are two other responses, one of which is, again, the never had a UDRP case, and the second one on a business day as soon as possible after we confirm the notice. Question 10, if the UDRP proceeding is decided in favor of the complainant after expiration of the 10-day wait period after a decision, do you typically move the domain name into an account accessible only to the complainant? 64% of respondents say yes, 18% say no, and 18% provided other responses. Basically, some of the responses say complainant must create or specify an account first. Again, never had a UDRP case. Yes, unless the complaint specifies cancellation as a sought remedy, a transfer out request from the complainant. We request the complainant to verify identity and to provide information for a new account. The domain is then removed into that account. Most of the times, the domain name is transferred out. Domain name is moved into an account accessible only to the complainant, only after the complainant has created the account. And I think those were the other responses. So question 11, if the UDRP proceeding is decided in favor of the complainant after expiration of the 10-day wait period after decision, when is the lock typically removed? 46% of respondents say within one day after the expiration of the wait period. 23% indicate between 1 and 2 days after the expiration of the wait period. 5% indicate between 3 and 5 days after the expiration of the wait period. And 5% indicates more than 5 days after the expiration of the wait period. And then there were as well some other responses indicating between 1 and 2 business days after the expiration of the wait period, after wait period when complainant provides new account, and never had a UDRP case, once the domain is in a new account, when the defendant who won the UDRP asks for a transfer, the lock is not removed until the domain name is moved into the account of the complainant. We wait for the complainant to tell us where to transfer the domain, and on business days as soon as possible after the expiration of the wait period. Question 12, if the UDRP proceeding is decided in favor of the registrant, when do you typically unlock the domain name after the 15-day wait period? 52% of respondents indicate that it happens within 1 business day. 35% of respondents indicate that this happens between 1 and 2 business days. 2% says this is between 3 and 5 business days after the expiration of the wait period. 2% says more than 5 business days. And then there were a couple of other responses. Again, never had a UDRP case. We've had not had any case when the UDRP proceeding was decided in favor of the registrant. And on business days, as soon as possible after the 15-day wait period. And question 13, does your website conspicuously list an email address that UDRP complainants should use to send you a copy of UDRP complaint? 50% of respondents indicates yes, 48% indicates no, and there was one other response saying no, we don't accept formal notifications of anything by email, registered post only. Question 14, are there any other issues or information the working group should take into account as part of its deliberations? First comment is there, while a lot of the above responses are based upon typical scenarios, there are significant numbers of cases where these times cannot be maintained as the required response from the complainant to proceed are not forthcoming. Second comment says, we need to clearly define what functions should be locked by the registrars. And two, we need to clearly define roles of registrar and complainant if successful to assume control of a domain name after decision. Third comment says that the UDRP boards have a requirement of a 2-day turnaround time for the verification of users. This sometimes is sent on a Friday afternoon or Saturday, and our registrar is not able to respond until the following business day. They need to set the expectation that a response is required within 2 business days and not just 2 days. Four, during the lock period and before the final UDRP decision has been reached, the registrant should be given the option to modify the domain name servers if needed. Five, the registry already locks the domain on a UDRP, so largely anything a registrar does is moot. Six, I would love to see statistics from the UDRP providers on how many cases the lack of locking is actually an issue. I've seen more issues with the size of document attachments and thus emails that were not delivered to the registrar. And then a couple of people that don't have any other comments. Another comment, more writing in clear English as to when action is required on the email recipient part. And the last comment in this question is a common implementation of registries lock for UDRP. And again, the remainder of the questions relate specifically to the charter questions. And I think, as you can see, there are quite a number of comments that have been submitted there, so you might want to review those at your leisure.
Thank you, Marika. Time for you to take a drink of water, I think. David, is that a new hand or an old one?
That's an old hand. I'll dispose of it.
All right. I only have one comment. It dawned on me as I was looking at in terms of this last question, the second response, saying we need to clarify exactly what locked means. I wonder, what are the implications on registrars if we indeed do that? Is it, you know, I mean, if we pick one of the formal lock statuses, then it's easy. If we pick something that is not one of the formal lock statuses, is it indeed reasonable to expect all registrars to be able to lock exactly those things? So I guess I'm asking, to what extent do we have freedom of specifying this based on the what we see as the needs as opposed to practical implementation issues for registrars? I don't know if anyone has an answer off the top, but it sounds to me as if we may be in a situation where we can't really do what our deliberations say we need to in any practical sense. Am I just blathering on, or does that make any sense through, especially to the registrars involved? Yes, it's blathering because no one has an answer. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't really have an answer either, but of course an option to consider would be that, you know, any kind of recommendations could say as well, like, at a minimum, this needs to be locked, and, you know, further locks or further prevention of changes are at the discretion of the registrar. So you might have a minimum set that is the same for everyone, but it doesn't necessarily impede on what, you know, certain registrars might do in these cases, or what has proven to work for some or maybe not for others. That's, you know, just something to consider.
Okay. We have 5 minutes left. Is there anything anyone else wants to raise? Do we think Michele is likely to be on the next meeting or not? Or don't we know? Marika?
Well, as he's on a vacation right now, he's probably going to be back by next week.
I just don't know how long it is. I guess that was the question I was asking. He has been responding to email, though.
Yeah, that doesn't work. I don't know exactly the answer. I believe he's back next week. But one question the working group might want to think about is, now having this data, how do we move from this to asking for further community input? Because I think one of the things we put on hold awaiting the results of the results received here is how to, you know, obtain input from the broader community and also reach out to the other SOs, ACs, and you know, how to go about translating these data into something that we can use to start looking at the charter question. So that's maybe some homework people can think about.
Okay. And there's a comment from Christine, which I haven't read, but Laurie just agreed. Okay. The comment basically says that what we have from the registrar in the registrar's responses are likely the quote unquote good registrars, and the issues that UDRP providers see may in fact be not related to those registrars, but the ones who aren't responding. And that's always the case, I guess. Marika, you said you hadn't had any chance at this point to do any real analysis of it. To what level of analysis were you in fact planning to do at this point, other than to obviously incorporate the new responses which weren't tallied here?
Right, this is Marika. I mean, on some of the where people provided other responses, I think there it's possible to group some of the answers. But I think what, you know, we might want to try to do is to translate these data and some kind of, you know, conclusions, more general kind of, like, in the majority of cases, this is what happens, you know, small majority, this is what happens, and maybe in that way it's something that can be included in the report as well, you know, linking as well to the survey, but that, you know, doing it in that way might give some more tangible information to the group as you know, how to proceed or what to do with that information.
Go ahead.
But if there's some real number crunchers out there, you know, I'm happy to provide as well the raw data because I know some people can do really cool tables and linking different answers to each other. So if anyone is volunteering for that or think there is value in that, and you know, we can definitely pursue that route as well. But at this stage, I'm not sure whether we're as well just some general conclusions on the basis of what we've found is sufficient at this stage.
We have a staff person who's proved very adept at that in the past.
I know who you're talking about.
I know who I'm talking about too, Barry. He's not volunteering at the moment. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it doesn't, Rick. I think I think we first need to have a look as well if that really makes sense because it does take time to do that and put that together. So in this case, I'm not sure whether we need to or whether it's you know what we have here is sufficient to draw some conclusions from.
Yeah, but it dawns on me that if we're going to ask for community input and use the surveys as one of the things that we're asking for comments on or giving it to them as background, we're going to have to do a fair amount of summarization because not many people are going to wade through this in the way we have it presented right now. Mm-hmm. So,
and this, Rick, I agree, and that's why I'm saying I think you know the way to deduct from that would be what the working group has found to date on the basis of the survey results, that is, in the majority of cases, this is what happens. You know, people have other experience or feel that is not representative of the situation. You know, please feel free to share input. We can frame it in those kind of more general ways because I agree, the data itself, I don't think we'll get a lot of input by just putting the survey out itself.
Yeah. If Marika, if you or anyone else, either staff or other participants, have any ideas on how we can approach the summarization. It seems like a massive job, and if we don't approach it with some sort of methodology, I think we're just going to do a lot of talking and not necessarily come out with anything. So any thoughts on the mailing list on how we approach that would be useful before the next meeting. In any case, our hour is up, and I thank you. I thank Marika for jumping in to the extent I've asked her to. And if there's no other thoughts, we'll adjourn and we're back next week, I presume.
All right.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ricardo. You may now stop the